making paper.
Welcome to episode 45 of Paper Talk, a monthly series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the field of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and today I'm talking with Madeline Durham, an artist in Santa Fe, New Mexico, who was introduced to paste painting when she studied painting and book arts at Santa Fe Community College. One day, when she applied paste to a sheet of paper with a brush, she noticed a line that her brush created on the sheet of paper.
Something different happened. That day, I grabbed a different brush to apply my paint to the paper. And just in the process of applying the paint, before I even started the combing, I saw a line that I had never seen before that my brush made. This had probably happened a lot of times before, but something about the whole magic of what was unfolding, that line just grabbed me by the tail and never let me go.
She tells me how she'd probably created similar lines lots of times, but something happened that day that inspired her unique and gorgeous style of paste painting. We chat about a couple of unique commissioned papers she's created, where she travels to sell her papers in person, and how she decided to teach her unique process to others. Enjoy our conversation. Well, Madeline Durham, welcome to Paper Talk.
Hi, Helen. Nice to meet with you.
Yeah, it's so fun to have you on, and I love your work. And I want to hear all about it. You make gorgeous paste papers in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So tell me how you got started, or even before paste paper, was there anything, were you doing something with paper or painting?
Well, what I tell people is I have been painting since I was a child. My mom is an artist, and I've just always had my hands in all kinds of arts and crafts, paint and pottery and anything you can imagine. And there's many stories how I came, there's many paths of how I came to paste paper, but basically I had a bead store in Santa Fe for 20 years and I closed it. And after my husband had passed away, it came time for me to reinvent myself and I went back to art school.
Okay.
Just as an exploration. And I was in the painting department and kept hearing all this laughter down the hallway and was curious what that was.
And where was this?
It was in Santa Fe Community College.
Okay.
Just close to home. It's something as a self-exploration.
Yeah.
So I wound up in the book arts and printmaking department, paper making and all those fun things.
Yeah. And you learned paste paper there?
I learned paste paper there. I started off with printmaking and then got lured into the book arts where I was making books with my papers that I was printing on. And one day the teacher gave a demonstration on paste paper. And it was really like, it was like one of those moments in my life where this light bulb went off and were on. And I kind of describe things as everything before that day and my life after that day. I never stopped. I just knew there was something in this that I had to pursue.
Right. So describe what paste paper is.
Well, paste paper, traditionally, it's a pigment that's mixed with some sort of paste. It can be wheat paste, rice paste, potato starch, different starches. And my understanding is that they were invented in Northern Europe a few hundred years ago for by bookbinders for the inside covers of books. But there's also evidence that it was used in ancient China in wallpaper design. And so it's something that's been around for a long time. And so you cook a paste up and then you mix it with your pigments, which I use acrylics. I think most people these days use acrylics. But I don't know, there might be other ways.
Right. And then I know when I think of paste paper, I think of lines drawn through it.
Right.
You know, or paste paper be anything, just painted?
Again, I like to say traditionally, you would take an instrument, a combed instrument, like a flat item that you cut notches in, Mm-hmm. And then you would drag it through the paste, and that creates a pattern of lines. And you can do wavy, straight. Another way paste papers are made is you take two papers that are very wet with a paste, pigmented paste, and stick them together and then pull them apart. And it creates a really beautiful pulling pattern that's really unique. So that's another method. So there's many traditional methods.
Right. And your style is very unique. I've never seen anything like it.
Right. Well, it's really interesting. I was working on traditional papers, and my teachers were encouraging me to make a business out of it, to at least go and see how I would do at the big shows, so, uh-huh. like at Guild of Bookworkers or a calligrapher's conference. So I signed up for Codex. I think I was a little bit ahead of myself because, you know, everybody's already seen traditional paste papers, but I just knew in my heart something was here.
And so Codex
couldn't stop.
Codex is a book arts fair in the Berkeley area
every
2 years. Yeah,
every two years. It highlights the finest fine bookbinders from around the world and paper artists, decorative paper and surface designers.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm trying. Well, I have a story around all this. I was working very hard to get ready for this show.
Yeah.
And at one point, I just got very tired and decided to take a few days off. So I went and saw that movie back in 2014 called Wild, the woman that walks the Pacific Crest Trail.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was driving home from that movie, and you know how people get, sometimes we all can kind of feel a little sorry for ourselves that we're not doing something so great and amazing. And,
mm-hmm,
oh, sure. I wish I could walk the Pacific Crest Trail. And I'm driving home with this mindset, and like a lightning bolt, it hit me that, wait a minute, you're on your own Pacific Crest Trail, and it's right there in your studio.
Mm-hmm.
And just because it's not in a movie and you're not out there telling everyone about it, this is it. So I got up the very first morning, next morning at 6 a.m., hit my studio, and something different happened. That day, I grabbed a different brush to apply my paint to the paper. And just in the process of applying the paint, before I even started the combing, I saw a line that I had never seen before that my brush made.
Mm.
This had probably happened a lot of times before, mm-hmm. but something about the whole magic of what was unfolding, that line just grabbed me by the tail and never let me go.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, what's that line? And I went back and forth and back and forth. And I mean, it was just really exciting. So I just completely turned a page and created as many of those papers as I could in the time I had left for the big show.
Uh-huh.
And they were the ones that sold and were very successful.
Oh, how interesting.
And I did sell the traditional ones, but those were mostly in my sale pile. So
right.
It was very exciting. But I have a little little ending to that story that's very curious. When I left to drive to California, I counted my papers,
mm-hmm.
and there were 1,200 papers.
Wow.
Normally, I only do about 400 for a show, but this was like years of experimenting and practicing.
Right.
But she had walked 1,200 miles on the Pacific Crest Trail. So I thought that was really kind of an interesting omen or, you know, sign or something that I was doing the right thing. So,
yeah. Wow. Wow.
That's my story of how I discovered that. And ever since then, I've been just playing with new patterns and new ways of moving the colors around and ever evolving.
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit about your materials, the papers you use and
yes.
The paste. I think you mentioned that, but you can say it again. And also, you're talking about using a brush versus before we were talking about a comb. So I'd like to...
Right, right. Do you want to, I guess I can start at the beginning. When I first started papers, I was a little confused about what papers were. And my first paper I did a lot of work on was Masa, Mm-hmm. And it's a machine-made paper, and I was just convinced that masa was like Kozo. Uh-huh. And I worked on it for over a year before I realized that it really wasn't. So I started with masa.
Okay.
And then I just started experimenting with a lot of different papers. After that, I ended up using Arches Text Wove, which is still my favorite. That's my paper that I use for most of my work. I also work on Kozo, the Japanese Kozuke. I think mm-hmm. I'm saying that right.
Mm-hmm.
It's partly machine made. There's still, you know, there's like a collaborative thing between the paper maker and the machinery. So I really love working on the Kozo too. It's a quite a different effect.
Right. So it's like the traditional Kozo fibers, but they are able to produce sheets on a machine. I think that's how that works.
Right, right. And it's a little smoother, so I don't pick up so much of the fiber when I'm dragging my brush across the paper or pulling my brush across the paper.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
And where were you sourcing these papers? Like, did you just go to the art supply store or...
Well, we're fortunate here in Santa Fe. We have Nawakam Press right down. I'm thinking of another one. That's not Nawakam. Tacatch Press.
Okay.
Down in Albuquerque, completely different thing. They're printmaking supply.
Okay.
And I just drive down there and get my papers, and I'll buy them in bulk.
Bulk. Yeah.
When I was a student, I would go down and buy and split it with all the other students who okay. go in on orders.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah.
Uh-huh.
What was the other question?
The brush, your use of the brush.
Oh, the brush. Yeah. Well, that first brush I used was a brush that my mom had given me that was one of her paintbrushes in the 60s. And I literally wore it out. I was a little worried at first. It's a filbert brush, and you know, it has to have just the right, for me, it has to have just the right kind of softness, not too hard, not too soft. And but I finally did find some brushes that work really well and reasonable enough that I can supply them in classes.
Right. Yeah. And why did you decide to use a brush? Because I don't think, is that a normal paste paper tool?
Well, initially, I was just using the brush to apply the paste to the uh-huh. paper before I dragged a comb through it.
Right.
Because I didn't like using my hands too much. I didn't like getting the pigments on my hands. So I would just brush the paper with my colors and then drag the combs through. Yeah.
Okay. And then you just, was it that one line that you saw that kind of led
to... It was that one day that I saw that line, that line grabbed me. You know, in my mind's eye, I think that line probably revealed itself many times before. It was just that one day I was open to seeing it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and something came from it. So I think that sometimes that happens when I'm in a stuck spot in my studio, feel like I need to take a break, and if I push through those barriers and things that are coming up in front of me,
mm-hmm.
Sort of like the scary stuff on the Pacific Crest Trail, things that scare you.
Right.
I push through that, and that magic happens, and I see it. So it was a real, I feel like it's been a big gift. It's been a real blessing.
Fantastic. Yeah. And your colors are so beautiful. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, they remind me of northern New Mexico.
Well, yes, I'm a native New Mexican. I grew up here, and it's interesting. I try to think about colors and why I am a colorist sort of the way I am, but it just feels like it's an inner thing that's real natural for me, bringing forth the colors of New Mexico. But when I first put my colors in my paint pots and they're just pure color, the first thing I do is kind of tone them down a little bit with the opposite colors or colors that will just, you know, I'll add a little black or brown or the opposite color, whatever feels right. And I have so many color pots going at once. And the paste gets a little bit, you need a lot in a cup to to do a series. So when my cup gets really low, I'll take what's left in that cup and just mix it in another color.
Uh-huh.
I just, you know, I'm always, a lot of my colors just have lots of mixes in them. It's hard to reproduce a color at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not very good at keeping notes. So,
oh, I share that.
Yeah. And I've decided that's okay. It's not how I work. So.
Right. So, so you did that Codex Book Fair, and then mm-hmm. tell me how else you sold your papers, and then just the segue I'm thinking of is you're talking about you're mixing up your colors, and you said you made 400 sheets for a typical sale.
Uh-huh.
So, do you mix up enough just to do a certain number in a certain color range? Because I've seen your papers for sale.
Yeah, yeah. I generally just mix a little cup, like a 6 to 8 ounce cup of color, and I'll start with, I have at least 3 colors, if not 10 or 11 going mm-hmm. at once. And then I got a little lost on the question.
Sorry. So how many sheets would you make of a particular?
Oh, well, the way I work, I don't try to use up a color unless I'm working on an edition for somebody.
Okay.
I have this way of, I'll do something that's feeling really successful. So I'll do multiple sheets, like I'll do 3 or 4 or 6. And there always seems to be a point where something shifts and it feels like I can't do anymore. Uh-huh. Like it's just not working the way it was. And then I'll shift to something else and do a different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I ebb and flow a lot. Maybe we could say that. So
yeah.
Unless I'm working on an addition, I don't try to use up all of one color in a sitting.
Got it. So the sheets really are fairly unique.
Yes, they are unique. And they do shift after I do 3 or 4 or 5, they just stop turning out the way I was envisioning, and I move on to the next inspiration.
Right, right. So where are you selling your papers?
Right now, the only place I sell my papers is when I travel to conferences or when I'm traveling to teach. So
right.
I try to go every year to the calligraphers conference,
mm-hmm.
but it was in Canada this year, so that was a little difficult logistically.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to I go every year to the Guild of Bookworkers, the Standards of Excellence show, which is really wonderful. I love these groups of people. They're really interesting to work with, and lots of enthusiasm.
Right.
So I have done a little bit of selling on Etsy. I haven't found it was really working that well for me, but these shows keep me pretty busy, and so do selling the papers through workshops. Keeps me pretty busy.
Hey, listeners, let's take a little break here, and I want to tell you about The Paper Year, a new monthly planner that will be ready for purchase by the next time you listen to this podcast. I'm rebranding the 12 months of paper calendar, a how-to book and calendar featuring a paper project every month, which I've produced for the past 3 years. The Paper Year is a wire-bound book still featuring 12 paper projects by me and 5 guest artists. And this year, there's an added feature, a planner page a month, which allows you to jot down notes and plans, sketch out your ideas and dreams, and paste in swatches of the papers you use to create your projects. Stay tuned for more info, which will be coming very soon.
Right, right. And so you travel to teach some workshops as well.
Yes.
And you teach some in your studio?
I will teach in my studio. I don't have a schedule. I have people contact me. If people want to set up a workshop, I'll set up a workshop for 2 or more people.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned commissions. Tell me about, I'm guessing when you go to the Guild of Bookworkers or whatever, there might be someone who's working on a book and wants to.
Right.
Tell me about 1 or 2 different projects.
Well, It's interesting. The first time I went to Codex, which is in the Bay Area, and I'm mm-hmm. from Santa Fe, New Mexico, right down the aisle from me was sitting Tom Leach from the Palace Press here in Santa Fe. Right. We had to meet out. I mean, we knew of each other in Santa Fe, but he didn't realize I was doing the papers. And
right.
He had a project that he'd had set down for a year or so, waiting for just the right papers, and hadn't quite decided what he was going to do. And when he saw my papers, he knew that was it. So I did an edition of 75 papers for a Palace Press book written by John Brandy, who's one of our local wonderful poets here in Santa Fe, poet and artist. And it was an edition of 45. It's called Desert Calling. And it's really, really beautiful. It's it's a soft covered book in a box.
And where was your paper used?
It was used on the soft cover of mm-hmm. the book that goes inside of the box, and it was used on the inside to line the box. So it's on the lining of the box and that cover of the book that goes inside the box. Uh-huh. And it's really beautiful. Yes.
I'll try to find a photo of that to put in the show notes.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. Do you have another commission, or do you get frequent commissions?
I do get some commissions. I had a commission for Nawakam Press. They are in Santa Rosa. I did some. It was interesting. I was doing my new patterns, and they contacted me and wanted me to do a traditional combing technique. Uh-huh. And I said yes, and it was really fun. A big blue wave on a the name is escaping me. It was a Robert Louis Stevenson poem that they had with beautiful woodblock prints. Mm. And the name's escaping me.
That's fine. and I think, did you have something you were going to add?
Oh, there was another
project
that I did, 125 large sheets, like 22-inch squares. Mm. For one of the three top social media platforms' annual reports, and that was really fun. But I can only say one of the top three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
one of our agreements. Yeah.
Right. Is that out already? If someone is
that was at a, it's not out. It's not available. That was just at a banquet, an annual
right
Christmas gala. Yeah. Right. Right. So it was kind of neat. Exciting. Yeah.
And I think you're doing more artwork now that is based on this techniques. Tell me about that and kind of how you're shifting. So you were really focusing on the paper just for a couple of years, I think.
Right. Well, starting in 2014.
Right.
I'm still doing the papers. I'm finding I've been transitioning into landscapes. A lot of my lines and my linear patterns and my papers remind me and remind everybody of sort of landscapes or waves and things in nature. So I started playing with that and developing clouds and mountains. And at first they were very graphic in nature, but then recently I've gotten much more painterly. Mm-hmm. And my so my clouds, instead of just looking like linear lines, are really kind of bubbling up the way that they do in the real New Mexico landscape. And just the effects I'm getting with my landscapes are really exciting.
I will post some images. And I spent time in Los Alamos. My dad was a physicist, and skies of New Mexico. They are like nothing else. I mean, I live in the next state, Colorado, but the skies of New Mexico are amazing, and the cloud formations. So these works, are they on paper also?
These are on Arches Text Wove, mm-hmm. and I mount them on a board on a 2-inch deep or 1 3/4-inch deep board. And then they're all sealed. But what I'm finding is that in order to do my landscapes, I need to continue doing my papers as warm-up. This process, I can't just sit down and create something. I need warm-up. It's kind of like doing scales or, you know, warming up your voice.
Right.
It's a warm-up. So I am finding a natural rhythm between the two so that I can still create both.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about your sort of the flow of your week or your day. So this might be a nice segue into
right.
Sounds like you mixed it up a bit, but
I do mix it up a bit. Oops, I'm shuffling the paper there. I do mix it up a bit, and there's also a flow that's seasonal because I'm very, very busy in the summer.
Okay.
And I have a lot of free time, well, not quite free time, but freer time through the winter months. So I really focus as much as I can on creating as much as I can in the winter months so that in the summer months when I have back-to-back shows downtown every weekend, I'm not having to work quite so hard. I have my inventory ready. And I have things. And sometimes I do get a little low on certain things and I'll get pretty busy. But yeah, there's just a hierarchy of importance to what has to get done. And
right.
Focus on, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you sell your, you call them paintings? Paste paintings?
Right. I actually call them paste paintings.
Paste paintings. Mm-hmm. And you're a member of the Santa Fe Society of Artists?
Right.
And just talk about that. So every weekend you mentioned.
Right. Almost every weekend. They have 22 shows a year starting in mid-April through mid-October. There's a few weekends we're not down there because of other Santa Fe events. But it's a wonderful show. It's juried. It's small, and it's just half a block off the plaza. So it's it's really delightful. I love it. I love the group of people. It's been a really wonderful place that this whole journey has taken me. That I started off by going back to school, looking to see what I should do.
Yeah, and I was able to find Madeline in her booth one day about a year ago. I was in Santa Fe for something, and I didn't even remember, but I was just walking around and stumbled across you. So people that are traveling to Santa Fe, check it out, the Santa Fe Artists Society.
They do. Yeah. And, you know, I have people come into my booth who have seen my work in other areas of the country, and that's pretty exciting.
And, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So you mean they have seen you at a conference or?
No, like seen my papers used in some. There's a woman in Santa Barbara who does printmaking on top of my papers.
Okay.
And they had just seen a show at a gallery in Santa Barbara with my work.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I know that. You've been to the Met, and your work is in a new archive that Mindy Dubansky is curating, and she was down in Santa Fe. I thought we could wrap up just touching on that.
Okay. Yes. Well, Mindy came to Santa Fe because at this point she has 26 different surface designer, decorative paper artists. In this group from the 1960s forward to the present day. And eight of the 26 are in Santa Fe, which is kind of remarkable.
Yeah.
So she made a special trip here and spent a week. It's called the Paper Legacy Project. And she is the head book conservator at the Metropolitan and was putting some time and effort into thinking about who is being left out, who is vulnerable in our modern day society to not being remembered down the road. Mm-hmm. And her thought was decorative paper artists, because you don't find their work anywhere really. It's been cut up, it's been used in books a lot of times things are used and the name of the artist isn't there. And right. So, you know, 100, 200 years from now, when researchers are looking into this, there's not much material to find. So she's putting this together, and I've been invited to be part of that.
Right.
So that's cool. Pretty exciting. And they're going to have an exhibition at the Met in the Grolier's Club in 2023. There's not an exact date yet, but it should be 2023.
Right. And I'll definitely have Mindy on Paper Talk before then.
Great.
That's some great paper things.
Yeah.
And so this is your busy season right now.
Yes.
So you're just kind of doing the shows, and do you have any near future plans you want to tell us about? Or,
well, this weekend I'm going to San Diego and teaching in San Diego.
Okay.
That'll be over by the time podcast gets out.
Yeah.
At the end of July, I'm traveling to teach in two out-of-state workshops in August. I'll be at Standards the Guild of Book Workers this October in Philadelphia.
Okay. So you're traveling quite a bit.
Right. I'm really putting some effort into the teaching this year.
Yeah.
After this year, it'll probably be more winter workshops and maybe one or two in the summer.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. And how do you find that teaching what you make? Was that like, did you wait until, I'm just curious about that. Did you wait until you started making artwork? So you kind of had shifted away from just making the papers, or?
Well, there were a number of things I waited for, which I think sort of all went hand in hand. And that was one of them.
Uh-huh.
The other is that I was raising a daughter and she was still at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just too much for me to try to think of traveling and having a 17-year-old.
Oh, right.
She's off to college and doing really well.
Great.
I wanted to make sure that I really had my work out there, recognizable as my own, mm-hmm. before I shared it. It was a little hard to think of sharing, mm-hmm. but I feel that it was important.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think is funny is that I let my daughter went off to college at the same time that it's like my other baby, letting it go too, like sharing that with the world. But I do think it's important to share this process and have other people benefit from being able to make some beautiful papers for themselves. So.
Yeah, and I've seen people post online after workshops with you, and I know they love it. So thank you for sharing your beautiful work with the world.
Thank you. And teaching is really, really energizes me. I love teaching. It's really fun.
Right. So. Yeah. Well, and where can we find you online, Madeline?
Well, it's my name, Madeline, at just madelinedurham.com. Should I spell that out? Madeline Durham, durham.com. And my website is a little out of date. I have some people working on a fabulous new website for me that should be up in another 4 to 6 weeks with a shopping cart. And I'm looking at putting my papers on there. So.
Oh, wonderful. And that'll be just in time for this podcast because it'll come out in
six to
8 weeks. So.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right, Madeline. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story on Paper Talk.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was great seeing you and talking.
Yeah. Okay. Bye now.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit HelenHebertStudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them, subscribe to the series via iTunes, and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon. The reason, besides